light up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 714. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am all by myself here today. No co-host. Let's all give warm feelings to Nicole and hope that she feels better. You are listening to me on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this puppy live at koop.org. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry. Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah. Give 'em the old razzle dazzle.
It is Wednesday, March, no, April 4th, I didn't, 5th, didn't write it down, 2023. On the show today, we have the Barrensmen and their production of The Winter's Tale, and then later we'll be talking to folks from the University of Texas Department of Theater, Dance, and the Cohen New Works Festival. And of course, we were going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Schmigadoon. Stick with us. Okay, here I am flying solo at Offstage and On the Air. Nicole is at home, not feeling well. I am sending her virtual chicken soups because it is chicken soup for the soul. But you know what? We have a full house here in the studio, so I have like some very good co-hosts to work with me. And let's talk about who's here. Lindsay Polinsky, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's good. Yeah, I think we have veterans, mostly veterans, all here. Stephanie Crignola, hi.
Hey.
How are you?
So good.
I said your name right, didn't I?
It was perfect, yeah.
Oh, perfect is even better than I thought it was going to be. Emma Winder? Is it Winder?
Winder.
Winder. I was so close. Here, because I engineer my own show and I'm on the air all the time, you see how the sausage is made? I want you to take that microphone and pull it right here next to your mouth. There you go. And Patrick Shaw.
Hi.
Oh, my God. Welcome back. It's been forever.
This has actually been my first time.
What? Really? Yeah. You've not been on the show before?
Yeah, I was asking Alex for tips.
That's crazy. I figured you had been here before.
Thanks for having
Well,
me.
I'm sure you'll be perfect. Song, did y'all recognize that song?
Yes, I loved it.
Did you recognize who was singing it?
No.
Okay, so that was Razzle Dazzle from the Broadway musical Chicago, but that was Dee Schneider, Twisted Sister,
yeah,
am I right?
Yeah.
And he did, and if Nicole were here, she'd be very excited because he did an album, oh God, 10 years ago, called Dee Does Broadway. And
oh,
it's him singing Broadway show. So we run back to Dee every now and then. And the reason why I played him, and especially from Chicago, is because Schmigadoon. So y'all are very excited. Lindsay and Stephanie were like very excited. Patrick and Emma, not so much.
I'm ready to be sold on Schmigadoon.
Oh, did you see it?
No, I haven't seen the first episode.
Well, you need to see the first episode, the first season.
Yeah,
there's another season.
Yes, yes. Already.
Started last night.
Schmigago.
Oh. Schmigago.
Oh.
So the first season, folks will remember because we talked about it ad nauseum here on the show, was musicals of the 60s, 50s and 60s. Those lovely standard American musicals that everybody just loved, like
Singing in the Rain,
like Oklahoma and Brigadoon, Schmigadoon. Singing in the Rain is actually a musical of the 80s.
Oh.
If you're talking about Broadway musicals.
Oh, okay.
It was a movie of that time. But
it's a
now,
very important distinction.
My brain almost
So this
exploded.
Season switched over to the musicals of the 60s and 70s. So I have not... Has anybody seen the first episode?
Not yet.
Okay, right. I got a little bit of time before I left here. I saw first 10 minutes of it. For 15 minutes of it. So I will tell you the opening is Pippin. It kind of magic to do.
Oh.
And then... Was this Wonderful. It seems like it's all Bob Fosse. There's a Sweet Charity.
I mean, that is the musicals of the 60s right. and 70s.
They did a really funny version of Big Spender. So we've talked about it on the show before. It is the same cast as last year. And I'm not going to... There's some quasi-spoilers I could do, more than I've already just done. They did add two cast members, and one is Patrick Page. Yeah, I know.
Stephanie loves him. I'm so excited. I don't know if I love him more than I love Keegan-Michael Key, though. So, like...
Both good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to make you jealous. Patrick has been a guest on this show several times.
Ooh.
He is a friend. And then, oh my God, I totally lost his name. From Kimmy Schmidt... African black actor.
Hannibal Buress? Titus Burgess.
Titus Burgess, yes. Yeah. And he's in it. He actually plays the leading male in Pippin.
Yes.
I can't wait. Okay. Oh my God. Sorry, I need to leave. Yeah,
so,
right.
I was a giddy little schoolgirl while I was watching it right before I got here. And I don't know when I'm going to be able to see the last 15 minutes of it, but it will happen. Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong are just amazing as they always are.
I love Cecily Strong.
She is amazing,
like,
isn't
she? Needs more stuff.
Agree. Mm-hmm.
She's got Schmigadoon.
Yeah, you haven't watched it yet.
Schmigadoon.
Yeah. So here's how we sell you on Schmigadoon. Only half an hour episodes, yep. And the capital T tropes in every episode. Yeah. Eat it up.
And if you want to be, there's, I forgot the gentleman's name. It's called Backstage on Broadway YouTube channel. He goes through, there's lots and lots and lots of, what do they call them?
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. Thank you. And he goes through, thank God. So he goes through a lot of those. So, Schmicago, I'm very, very, very excited about that. You know, so that's it. But we have had two Broadway openings. Hold on, don't go away. My notes are way over here.
She's got that long reach.
Those people watching in video on the video stream saw that, but we don't have a video stream.
Oh, I was looking around for a camera.
So we had Life of Pi open up.
From London, right?
From London. Yeah. Yep. And did everybody see the movie or read the book?
No, I didn't either. Enlighten me. Tell me things.
I did not read the book, but the movie was amazing. Did you see the movie?
I love the book. I thought the book was really beautiful. Yeah.
So it tells a story of a family that ran a zoo, and they left India? Is that where they were from originally? On this ship with all these zoo animals. The ship went down. Everybody was lost. Except for this one boy and some animals, one of which was a Bengal tiger. All the other animals perished, and he's left on this small dinghy boat with a Bengal tiger. And it's this whole thing about trying to survive, the two of them surviving without one eating the other.
I've seen videos on TikTok of the puppet.
Yes, well, yeah, we're getting to that. Okay. I mean, I'm talking about the movie right now. But the play pretty much follows the music, the movie, and there is a puppet. You can, whoops. Well, maybe I just dropped my computer, which still works. That's good. But I was going to show y'all a picture of the puppet, but it's gone.
It's one of those that have like four puppeteers.
Four puppeteers.
Yeah. They look stunning.
And one of them actually voices the tiger as well. And the tiger, I just love the name of the tiger is, hold on, I've got a, it's, well, the boy's name is Pi and the tiger's name is Richard Parker.
right.
So Patrick, did you not see the movie?
I saw the movie, but I loved the book.
I just went, just now that I said that word, the name out loud, I just remember him calling him Richard Parker.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's such
a surprising
thing. Emma, you're quiet.
I'm so sorry. I've never seen the movie, read the book.
Okay, well, you just stay quiet.
I will just stay quiet.
No, don't stay quiet.
There's an orangutan there,
I've seen
I think,
the promo
too,
videos.
Right?
The puppetry looks absolutely incredible.
Puppetry is amazing, and that's what the reviews all say. So did they like it? Review aggregator, out of 14 reviews, 10 were positive, 4 were mixed, and 0 were negative. we always look at the New York Times, and Alexis Selesky did the review for that. And I'm just going to read the first two paragraphs. She says, quote, "The butterflies enter first, quivering gaily atop their sticks. Then a giraffe pokes her head in. A goat gambols. A hyena cackles. One zebra runs on. Then another. An orangutan swings through while her baby reposes on a branch nearby. Above, monkeys and meerkats chitter. In the first act of Life of Pi, a menagerie, menacing, delightful, entrenches itself on stage at the Broadway Gerald Schoenfeld Theater. With dazzling imagination and sublime control, the show's cast and crew conjure a delirious, dynamic, highly petable world. And oh, is it a wonder. Though the play is ostensibly about one boy's fraught survival after disaster, that story is somewhat thin. Life of Pi instead succeeds on a broader tribute to human ingenuity and animal grace." Does that opening scene remind you of another show? Famous Broadway show?
Which,
do you know the words?
Yes, we learned them for a Shakespeare play I was in college. We all sang it from behind the stage. We did a trailer park farce of Titus Andronicus and sang that.
Oh my God. So yeah, it really reminds me of the opening of The Lion King, which is, if you've seen it, it's amazing. Has anybody here been to The Lion King to see the opening? Patrick?
I have not seen The Lion King.
I haven't seen it on Broadway, but I've seen it on tour twice.
Yeah, it's that feeling, especially the puppets in the opening. I've seen it in both places. Amazing. And we've talked about it here on the show. During COVID, when the tour started happening again, the actors didn't come out into the house. So when you saw it was still pretty amazing from what I'm told. I missed it when it came here, but they didn't get that procession. But that has a total feel of that.
People love that, but no one likes cats.
Everyone's same wrong vibe about not liking cats.
My brother was traumatized.
I'm not
by
saying
cats.
A word.
Stephanie and I are unashamed cats lovers over here.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show. So the animals were all designed by Nick Barnes and Finn Caldwell. The movement direction was by Caldwell. It just seems like just such an amazing, wondrous piece. It kind of says that the story is okay. It's good. But what's incredible to watch here is the spectacle of it all. Evidently, the set like morphs and changes all the time.
Wow, I love a set change moment.
Yeah, well, and it goes from ocean to island and all that stuff. And now I want to read the book.
Yeah.
Especially because I love the movie, and and always the book is better than the movie.
I just remember like the feeling it gave me. It gave me such like a. It's very sad and full and
yeah. Other critics, Broadway News' Brittany Samuel said, Pi is not afraid to hold seemingly opposite logics and faith in the same hand. Neither is Chakrabarty, who wrote it, in a brilliantly staged dramedy that constantly blurs the lines between fact and fiction. This is Chris Jones of the New York Daily News. Despite watching decades worth of attempts, I've never seen a show that better conveys the sea or so many creatures trying to ride its waves and avoid being swallowed. Vulture's Jackson Henry says, we're here for the tiger, folks. And yes, this tiger is pretty cool. So definitely worth seeing. I'm not sure whether it won a whole bunch of Oliviers. I think it did.
I think so.
Which we're going to talk about the Oliviers pretty soon because they just happened. So what the other Broadway show that just opened last night was Shucked, which I had not heard, or I thought I had not heard of it. And then it just started getting buzz about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And it was, and I do remember talking about this a while ago, it was originally the Hee Haw musical. And as someone that grew up in the Hee Haw generation.
Like the old TV show?
Like
Hee-Haw?
The old TV show, yeah.
Okay.
Which did not make me very happy because that was just such schlock.
You can leave that back there.
But evidently, this show, Shucked, has very little resemblance to the original. Lots of changes. I'm just going to read the description on Did They Like It. Shucked is a hilarious new musical fable about an unlikely hero, an unscrupulous con man, and an unforgettable battle for the heart and soul of a the heart and soil of a small town. Grammy Award winners Shane McNally and Brandi Clark, the biggest names in country music. Never heard of them.
Same.
I'm not a country music person. Now make the Broadway debut with a score fresh and golden as, well, corn itself. The book is by Tony Award winner Rupert Horn and director by Tony Award winner Jack O'Brien. This corn-fed, corn-bred American musical is surely sure to satisfy your appetite for great music and great musical theater. So this is sort of like when Book of Mormon opened. Everybody, you know, it was this kind of check your brains at the door musical, but it harkened it back to the old American musical, like from Schmigadoon.
It sounds like Country Music Man.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That is referenced in the review.
Oh!
It's so funny that you should say that, but yes.
Country Music Man. Put that in the log line. I love that.
Con man, small town.
But evidently it is just filled and filled and filled and filled with puns.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting observation that you are the thing that you just said, because I don't know why people don't like puns. Somebody explain this to me.
So for me personally, when I like speak or hear words, I see the words written down. So like I see them like in my brain. And so because I see it spelled, I am bad at thinking of other ways it could be spelled sound the same. Mm-hmm. So I just can't do them. And so I hate them. I'm bad
hate
at them.
Hate is such a big, that's a big word.
I'm also kind of bad at puns. But for me, I think the grown-up puns comes from like the person who is doing the pun always thinks it's better than what the payoff actually
that's
is.
Part of the fun.
And like, and there's such a buildup. I think the most successful puns are sneaky puns. We have a friend, Chris Casey, who is very good at like a long-winded story that like kind of punches with a pun at the end. And it's like, that's a fun groan. It's because he's like, I'm thinking it's a real conversation.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of puns, but this is also filled with dad jokes, of which I'm also a fan.
Yeah, as a new father, I feel the pun growing.
So among other people that are in it, Alex Newell is in it, and she evidently is the one to watch. She's got the show-stopping song, and evidently she's just amazing. She goes, Newell, having absorbed the whole vocal thesaurus of diva riffs, shouts, gurgles, and growls, stops the show. But after the ovation, I found myself wondering what a huge talent could do with a more commensurate role like Effie in Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
Didn't she sing that in Glee?
I am telling you.
I think she did. This is a review by Jesse Green in the New York Times. He ends his review with, still, with all its fake unsophistication, I like the idea of that, fake unsophistication, Shucked is what we've got. And in a Broadway musical season highlighted by anti-Semitic lynching, a murderous barber, and a dying 16-year-old, some amusing counter-programming is probably healthy. You may even find its final moment moving as the paradox of separation and inclusion is resolved in a lovely flash. Just don't expect intellectual nourishment. Forgive me if I'm breaking my promise, but it's mostly empty calories you'll find in this sweet down-market cornucopia. His promise was that he wouldn't put puns in this. But he did. Broadway.
Light punning. That was a real light pun.
It is light pun. Yeah. well, it was Jesse Green. What do you expect? Broadway News. Brittany Samuel said, embrace each grain of fun and you'll have an amazing night on Broadway. Don't and you'll experience corn-clad hell on earth. Adam Feldman said, the jokes pop like corn on a cast iron stove. And finally, Vulture's Jackson McHenry said, the best way I can describe the musical Shucked is by paraphrasing the Roy Cohn character in Angels in America. It's about corn, singing corn. You'll love it.
I'd see it. I'd go.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
sounds good.
Me too.
Is there a big like Be Our Guest moment of corn? Like
no,
ears of corn?
That wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
And
I don't know.
Tools dancing and stuff. Yeah, like I need a Lumiere of corn, please.
You don't need 76 corn cobs.
Oh my god, we are going there, aren't we? Y'all didn't like puns.
The spooky maze.
Yeah, I am amazed at that. There, fun. So we've actually talked a lot, so we're not going to get to everything I wanted to talk about, which is very sad. But let's do talk about the Olivier Awards real quick. The Olivier Awards, of course, are London's version of the Tonys. And I'm going to try to find my Olivier. There it is. And the big winner was Prima Facie with Jodie Comer. And I didn't read the reviews on the West End thing, but it's a one-person show that was written by Susie Miller. It was named the best play, and also she got best actor. It's moving to Broadway. It starts previews at the Golden Theater on April 11th. Sounds amazing. And I only know Jodie Comer from... what's that TV show?
Was she a Doctor Who?
No. Oh, I have no idea.
No.
Oh, my gosh. Can't remember what it is. People will write in and tell me what it is. But she was amazing. It stars... What's her name? It stars that woman from that show.
Oh, we're on a roll here, guys.
Yeah.
Killing Eve.
Killing Eve. Thank
She's
you.
She's the amazing.
She's the amazing bad guy, yeah. Russian person, and she is absolutely amazing in that, or at least in the first couple of seasons. I gave up on in the last season, but I'm so glad that she won. That was her West End debut. And other shows that she was going against is To Kill a Mockingbird. Patriots, and then for Black Boys Who Have Considered Suicide When the Hue Gets Too Heavy. And of course, that's the male version of For Colored Girls. Mm-hmm. I just found that very interesting. Mm-hmm. Evidently, you can see all of the Olivier Awards on YouTube, which is the Tonys will put things up and then immediately take them down. So if you don't see them right away, but from what I understand, the Olivier's will stay on YouTube for a while. All right, couple more minutes. Let's see what I want to talk about. That's real fun. That will work for all of us. Oh, here's an interesting thing. I didn't realize, and this is about Chucked as well. Back in the day, I'm really, really old. And back when I was living in New York, previews were cheaper than after it opened. That's not the case anymore. When a show opens for previews, you're paying the same price you would after it opened, which seems strange to me. Yeah. Specifically, in the previews, by dint of what it really is a system for them to work on the show in front of an audience. So it's not a complete show. I thought that was still going on. Well, Shocked went back to preview pricing. And at first, when I first saw the headline, I said, well, that's really good of them. But they did it mainly because they were the dark horse. And so they wanted an audience. They didn't care about money. And they were talking about what it looks like. And, all the pundits on Broadway look at the grosses. And if your grosses are at a certain point, if you're only selling, 25% of your potential, and the potential being the post-opening numbers, then that doesn't look good. On the other hand, if you want to fill seats and you start at 50% of potential and you go up really fast, that looks good. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that's a good thing that they did. And I actually have in here, the Shucks previews were as low as $69. With a cap at $149. Now, that still seems pricey to me. But still.
A lot of my students have been posting scene, and I was like, I wonder why everybody's seen that show. That makes sense. Now I know. Yeah.
I feel like Danson didn't do full-on preview pricing, but I was going to try to go when they were still in previews, and I think they were $30 less per ticket during previews. But I wonder if that has to do with if they think the show will change very much during previews.
I do not know. But I mean, that whole world has changed so much. So when I opened a new show on Broadway back in the 80s, and those previews were really important. We were changing things every day. But at that time, critics did not come until opening night. Mm-hmm. Now, shows have to be ready a week prior because critics come for that full week prior to opening. So I don't know. It's a different world right now.
And there's so much revival action happening that things aren't going to change as much as...
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and interestingly enough, and I won't go and look at the ad, but we just had something that was announced yesterday was the production of The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window that was playing at BAM, the Elaine Hansberry play that she did after Raising the Sun with, what's her name, Brosnahan and...
Oscar Isaac.
Is moving to Broadway. And they're moving to Broadway in 2 weeks, and they are doing 3 days of previews. And then they're running for an 80 show run. I just did all that by memory. But one of the podcasts I listened to was just astounded by like two previews. But if you think about it, they just finished their run. So they are all rehearsed and ready to go. It's not a new play. So they're not going to be making changes. So what do they need previews for? Mm-hmm. They're ready to, I mean, they're pretty much ready to go as far as the actors goes. Mm-hmm. You know, the scenery is, the set is pretty much the same. They're all ready to go. Mm-hmm. So there, that's how I feel about it. And the last thing I want to talk about before we go to break is Camelot, which is coming to Broadway. I surprised myself. You know, I think I see all these things and know a lot of things. I've never seen a stage production of Camelot.
I've seen a lot of the preview clips on TikTok, and I can't wait. I really hope I get out to see it.
So this is directed by Bartlett Sher, and it's led by Andrew Bunnip, Philippa Sue, who I love, Jordan Donica, Dakin Matthews, Taylor Trench, a lot of other people. And it is opening on April 13th. It's in previews now. It looks very exciting. Do you like Camelot?
I love anything Arthurian legend. So, yeah.
Okay.
The music's not my favorite.
Did you read The Once and Future King?
It's my favorite book.
I love that. I went through a whole time in my youth where I read that. There was another one, and then I went to the Mort d'Arthur.
Yeah,
I was like crazy. So let's listen to a little bit of Camelot from the original, and we'll hear Julie Andrews singing this song, I Loved You Once in Silence. We'll be right back.
I loved you.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOP 91.7 and, coincidentally, KOOP.org. I am Lisa Sheps. We just had a lovely discussion about the world of theater with Emma Winder, Patrick Shaw, Lindsay Polinsky, and Stephanie Cragnola. And we're going to now just talk to Stephanie and Lindsay about their upcoming project from the Barons Men. Newcomer playwright William Shakespeare wrote this show, part of the First Folio, called The Winter's Tale. So somebody tell me about this show. I have never seen it. Although last week I left this studio pursued by a bear.
So Lisa brings up a very key detail that one of the world's most famous stage directions, Exit Pursued by a Bear, is from this play. But The Winter's Tale is not frequently produced. It's one of Shakespeare's problem plays because the first half is a tragedy and the second half is a comedy. So it's sort of like...
That sounds like my life.
Yeah, basically. And it's sort of like we kind of smushed two plays together and made the best of it. Mm-hmm. We just did an education day out at ASA Academy last week, and you know the kids were asking, oh, what's the play about? And we're like, well, the first half is just a bunch of grown-ups yelling at each other, and then the second half is the love story and the reconciliation and all of that. It's got some really meaty emotions, a lot of intense emotions. Stephanie's playing Paulina, which in I think probably both of our opinions is one of the best women in all of Shakespeare. Yeah. So Stephanie, you can talk more about the show because you're actually in it.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
No, it's just, it's a really great, I think, as Lindsay was saying, Paulina is a character who I think is one of the few in Shakespeare who is allowed to speak to a king in the way that she does, and he actually listens and maybe internalizes some of that. So the power dynamics in this play through the whole thing really put women forward, and that's one of the things that I really like about it.
Right, which is not something Shakespeare is known for, really,
yeah,
per se. Mm. So that is one of the questions. You are playing, you are an actor in this show playing Paulina, and also Dorcas.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just fun to say.
Yeah. Yeah, the kids had a field day with that
Tell
one, too.
Tell us about Dorcas.
So, like Lindsay said, the first half is a tragedy set in Sicilia. The second half is a comedy set in Bohemia.
Oh, so it's actually two, almost like two plays?
They come together at the end, yeah, but you kind of weave those threads together the further you get into it. But it's the sheep shearing festival. Everyone is having a good time. There's dancing. They're singing. And Dorcas is one of the girls, you know, vying for the attention of the clown. And it's very fun and very silly.
So Vying for the Attention of a Clown was the name of my third book.
That's the third act. Yeah. It's the tragedy. Yeah,
that's the epilogue.
Absolutely. That's the Greek tragedy. Lindsay, you are designing the costumes and assistant directing.
Yes, yes.
In case you didn't know.
So I signed on as assistant director for Annalise Friend. She's a new director to the Baron's Men, but she's been a member of our organization for a while now, just to kind of have backup for her, as far as I have been with the Baron's Men for 13 years now, so I kind of know how some of our peccadilloes work to coach her along that way. She's done an amazing job. She grabbed these directing reins and ran with them. I watched the show for the first time last night because we did a no costume rehearsal last night. So I actually got
like
to watch
them.
Like
they were naked?
No, they were wearing normal clothes, a casual dress, not Elizabethan clothes.
Call the deputy.
And so I got to watch the show, and it is really wonderful. I also am costume designing this show. This is my third time designing for the Baron's Men. We use a lot of our stock that we've built up over the last 24 years. So you'll see some familiar costumes. But every show we try to make a couple of new costumes. So I did not make anything new myself. I farmed that out. But King Leontes and Queen Hermione both have brand new beautiful costumes made by our master costumer, Dawn, Allie, and then her apprentice Renee Osborne have just truly created some magic, and everyone, it seems, has picked up a needle and thread for this show. It's really cool. There are 60 individual costume pieces in this show, not counting tights and under things, because there is a 16-year time lapse during intermission.
Oh, okay.
15 years. So like, and a lot of people are double cast, like Stephanie, so everyone has two costumes.
This shows my ignorance of this piece because I've never seen it. So you say it all ties together. Does Paulina come back as an old lady at the end? 15 years older?
You'll just have to wait and find out.
Darn it. Dang you. There's no spoilers. This was written years ago.
Yeah, come on. You could look it up on Wikipedia.
I'm not giving away those secrets.
I remember there being magic in the show.
There is magic in the show. So Shakespeare...
Speaking of Pippin.
Yes. In order to convey to the audience that time has passed, Shakespeare created the character of time. And in Annalise's production, she has kind of woven this character of time throughout a couple of different characters through double casting and all of that. Yeah. And then there is some fun, sparkly magic having to do with the queen, with Queen Hermione. There's some special magic that you'll have to come see.
So, I mean, I think that maybe Harry Potter people will really like to come and see this show.
It's not magic wands magic.
No, I'm thinking of Hermione.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. J.K. Rowling did steal that name from Shakespeare.
Sure, she did. But speaking of names, and I in Chicago, I moved here from Chicago, and I lived on Paulina Street.
Hi.
There you go. See, that's the connection.
Nice.
1518 North Paulina, for those of you that want to go visit. I loved telling people where it was, because it was, I lived on Paulina just south of North.
I love it. I love it.
North is a street.
And those are my two favorite numbers, 15 and 18.
Well, of course.
There we go.
Mine too. Well, this is great. So what I take it this is taking place in the Elizabethan period?
Mm-hmm. It is, yes. The Baron's Men, we perform plays that are written or set before 1650 in the similar methods to how Elizabethans would have performed. So you'll see full Elizabethan costuming. We do use electric lights, but we don't use amplified sound. And we are in the Curtain Theater, which is a scaled replica of an original 1500s Elizabethan theater. It is one of the few outdoor Elizabethan replica theaters in this country. Austin is truly, truly lucky to have this gem. And we are so lucky to play on the stage.
Yes.
And it is beautiful. I tell people whenever the Barensmen's on or Young Shakespeare, who also mm-hmm. performs out there. Richard Garriott's Curtain Theater is out 2222 and 360 in that area. And it is beautiful to go there. And I really suggest people go. I'm assuming y'all allow that to come a little early so you can walk the grounds.
Absolutely. Walk the grounds, bring a picnic dinner. The spring onions were in bloom when we moved into the theater last weekend. And it smelled, I love the smell of onions. It smelled really, they're gentle. It's nice. It's really nice. And then just having Lake Austin right there in front of you, it's a magical experience.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And that theater is very nice. If you have not experienced the Curtain, I would encourage you to try it. If not with the Barensmen, something else, but why not do it with the Barensmen?
Yeah.
And that has been your home for the whole time?
Since it's been built. So yeah. I believe we are in our 24th season, and I believe that the Curtain was built around 18 to 20 years ago. So it's been our home since it existed.
There you go, which is great. I love that place. When do y'all open?
We open tomorrow.
Could you do that again and say it together? No, I'm kidding. So you open tomorrow.
Line it up and
that's
post.
The 6th of April.
Yes, April 6th. We run Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays for 4 weekends. All shows start at 8 p.m.
Okay. Through the 29th,
through the correct? 29th, yep.
Now, those people, since we're such a timely show here at Offstage and on the Air, if you look at the weather forecast, they're projecting some rain this weekend. What do y'all do in the case of rain?
In the case of rain, we notify people who have pre-purchased tickets mm-hmm. via email. We also post on our social media. We try to post around 6:30, 7 o'clock. We try not to call it too early in case it blows through. We've done that before. Call the show at 2 o'clock and then it was sunny mm-hmm. at 7. Mm-hmm. And we try not to wait until everyone's at the theater, though we can't be held responsible for the sky opening up at 8:45 p.m. But we try to make a call by between 6:30 and 7, post it on Facebook, Instagram, and our website, and then send an email blast out to people who have purchased tickets for that evening. You can reach out to us to reschedule your tickets. We'll do our best to accommodate you in the seats you had before. Right. If those seats aren't available, we'll accommodate you in the next best.
There's no bad seats in that place.
There's no bad seats.
It's
kind of,
it's in the round, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell this story all the time on the show, so people are bored with hearing it. But I did an outdoor drama in the late 70s, and we had what's called rain pace. And if it was threatening rain, the deal was that the audience would get a refund if they called it before act two. So if it was threatening rain, the stage manager would come to us and say, rain pace. And then we just take all pauses. Any acting went away and we just said the lines as fast as we could so that we could get past.
We've done that before as well. We had a rain happen during our production of The Tempest a couple of years ago. And I came out and I said, guys, no intermission. Let's go. And we had rain pace. And it was actually a lot of fun.
Well, but if you're going to do a show in the rain, The Tempest is the one to do it in.
Yep.
Well, great. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
You can visit us online at thebarensmen.org or on Facebook at The Barensmen, Instagram at The Barensmen, TikTok at The Barensmen.
Wonderful. Well, thank y'all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Well, great. You are welcome to stick around for the rest of the show. But if not, we really enjoyed having you here.
I want to learn more about what UT's doing.
Same. Well,
there you go. So that was Lindsay Polinsky and Stephanie Crignola of The Barensmen, The Winter's Tale at the Curtain Theater from April 6th through the 29th. For more information, thebarensmen.org. And I just had to go with the bear theme for our song. We will be right back.
And down at Covington's Sporting Goods Store, Ulysses crawls into a bear trap.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air. We just heard a wonderful things from the Barron's Men's, Lindsay Polinsky and Stephanie Craniola. And so y'all were listening to that music about getting caught in a bear trap, and we had a question. Look, I did not say what show it was from. Anybody have any? I'll give you a hint. It was written by Galt McDermott, who was one of the writers of Hair. Mm.
It sounded mythological.
Was it
or
Forum?
Greek? No. It,
that's a good...
Because it was Ulysses crawled into a bear trap.
Yep. Oh, well, it didn't crawl in. He stuck, caught something.
Okay. Something. No, he crawled in.
The Human Comedy.
Oh.
Okay.
By Galt McDermott. Locally, we don't have a whole bunch of stuff. Not a lot of new stuff is coming in. But I did want to mention that different stages, the tavern had to close a whole weekend early because of... officially, they said sickness. I'm just going to go out on a limb and figure it's COVID, but who knows? But regardless, that's just tragic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of theater companies have been dealing with that. But I'm glad they made the right decision, presuming it's the right decision. The other things that are playing right now are UT, Cohen's New Works Festival, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. Then Vincent is still over at Ground Floor Theater, Penfold Theater. It closes this weekend. The Dragonfly Princess over the Vortex is still playing. And as always, we keep talking about it. Cat in the Hat at Zach is still there. Mm. It plays through the 23rd of this month. And I'm very excited for this. Starting previews tonight... over at the Zach Theater is Row. And I know so many people, so many amazing people that are in it. And of course, Jenny Lavery is directing it. And I'm looking so forward to seeing that. And we're going to get them here on the show pretty soon.
One of our students, she's at UT right now as well.
What's her name?
Jenny Lavery.
Oh, Jenny is one of your students. Oh, that's right. She went back to... I went, Jenny's one of your students? maybe you're her
she's
student.
She's studying with me.
What do you teach?
I teach playwriting and directing.
Oh, good. I haven't taken your class. I need help in both.
Anytime, Lisa. You got to see.
I need help in both of those things.
Emma has.
So, I take playwriting and directing from Pat.
Yes. No, okay. I'm in. Can I come in? What's it called?
Audit
it.
Audit, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I ought to audit it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about a little sensitive issue because this has come up so much. And the cast list for Matilda out at Zilker came out. And Trunchbull is being played by a man. And of course, it was played by a man in the original. But when it opened, I just forgot his name. Nicole would be all over me right now. She loves him. And Anyway. Bernie. I know. I'm waiting for my phone to ding because Nicole's probably going to call. You're so stupid. But anyway, I just have a problem with the man in the dress trope, which is what that is. And thankfully, Chicago has taken that away because what's her name? What's the role?
Mary Sunshine
was historically played by a man. They made a big ha-ha joke out of it.
Still was a few weeks ago when I saw Chicago
in
January.
I thought they got rid of it.
Not when I went... I saw it on Broadway like month and a half ago.
Okay, then I'm wrong. I thought they
got
rid of
it. It was the same guy that's been doing it for like 20 years.
For some reason, I thought they got rid of that on Broadway. Mm. Okay, never mind.
Or maybe he came back.
But anyway, I am disappointed. But I did look a little bit, you know, when you go and look at the site for, and I don't know which site it was, Concord Theatricals or whatever, whoever's holding the rights, it says that Trunchbull could be played by either a man or a woman, but the person should have male qualities. And that's how Roald Dahl wrote the character in sort of a transphobic way, if you ask me, right. When she is described, and I wish I had written it down. I took no notes on this. But she's described when she's physically described, it's as you would describe a big, burly man.
I was hoping that Emma Thompson would have ended that.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of shaken by the Chicago thing. I thought they got rid of it. As a trans person, I have a big problem with the man in the dress trope because that's what set us back for so long. And then you get shows like Some Like It Hot, which evidently did it all right. I was not a big fan when I heard that Some Like It Hot was going to go, but evidently they took that old dated material, which some people would say shouldn't come back on stage, and they really modernized it to a current audience. I don't know. I just, am I wrong?
No.
Yeah, it feels unnecessary.
What about Chicago then? Sunshine. I don't think that should be played by a man.
It felt unnecessary, although I will say they did a very good job with his makeup, wig, and costume, because I did not clock it until he took the wig off at the end.
When I first saw it, I did not. I did not know it either. But that's a 2-hour setup.
I just don't see
for
why
a
5-second
laugh.
And especially in Matilda, like when you're playing into this villain role, like there's no space for that to be the underlying detail. Like it doesn't. It's not important, and it's not like it just dehumanizes the whole character.
It has nothing to the story.
Yeah.
But if you take it back to Chicago, I'm going to sort of stuck on this. The show, the storyline of the show does not, it has, whether that person is played by a man or woman doesn't change the storyline. It's literally a gag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as a trans person, I take offense to that. Yeah. And I'm not really upset that it's still being played by a man. I thought they gave that up. So that's that. So we're going to get into Today in Theater History and just move forward. So Today in Theater History, The Pirate Queen opened in 2007. Evita Revival opened in 2012. Follies, 2001. I've never seen Follies. I really want to see it. They had the revival a few years back that was really big. I did not get to see it. And I know that Nicole is going, oh, I know. She loved it. She saw it. 1,000 Clowns, which I did ages ago, opened in 1962. and interestingly enough, and I did not do this on purpose, Human Comedy opened on this date in 1984. I chose that music before I saw this.
Wow.
Yeah. Birthdays, Frank Gorshin, who I worked with once before, born in 1933. People will know him as the Riddler on the original Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Natalie Venetia Belcone, who I don't know. Betty Davis, what a dump, born in 1908. Gregory Peck, don't know who he is, born in 1916. Did I say Spencer Tracy? I didn't. Spencer Tracy, born in 1900. I know. Amazing. All those old-timey actors. Wow. Well, great. Let's take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk about the UT Cohen New Works Festival. And we'll listen to my favorite song from Follies, Buddy's Blues. We'll be right back.
I got.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On Air with Lisa Sheps and nobody else, just me. No, we've been having lovely discussions with Lindsay Polinsky, Stephanie Cruniola, Emma Winder, and Patrick Shaw. And I'm just going to go right out and say this is probably my favorite show today. Been having a great time.
Me too.
Thank you. So let's talk about the University of Texas, which is a school here in town I just learned about. I didn't know it was here. And the Cohen New Works Festival, which has been going on for quite a while. And we have, we'll give you your official introduction, the communications chair, Emma Winder.
That's me.
And Patrick Shaw, faculty producer.
Faculty producer.
Now, Patrick, I know you, and I've always called you Patrick. When I was sent, it says Pat. Do you prefer Pat or Patrick?
I like both of them. Usually, I introduce myself as Patrick because Pat just flies by. I find myself repeating myself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're Patrick for me, unless you don't like it. So the Cohen New Works Festival, I don't know that I've ever had y'all on this show before.
Wow.
Because it always pops up in my radar too late. But somebody, one of you, tell people what the Cohen New Works Festival is, how long it's been going on, etc.
Mm-hmm. It's over 40 student-created original projects all across the Winship Building, our theater building. And the entire week-long festival is student-led, student-run, student-organized with the help of faculty producers, obviously.
Very distant support.
What is that? Is that undergrad, grad, or both?
Both. Mm-hmm. Everybody and their second cousin, basically.
Yeah, we put
first
together...
First cousins are not allowed.
No.
Just wanted to clear that up.
Okay. Yeah, we put together a committee, and Emma's one of these committee members, and we give them a big budget, and we just cut them loose. We just try to support them and make them... They make plays, dances, installations,
films.
Yeah. So we're like in the middle of this year's festival.
Yeah, right, I've seen 13 pieces in the last 2 days.
Wow. I have to say that, you know, I've been aware of the Cohen Works Festival for a long time, and this is the first time I actually really looked at like the itinerary. Oh my gosh, there's so much going on. Did you say it and I missed it? How long? When was the first?
It started in 2001, okay. And it was started in the memory of David Mark Cohen. Did you know him when he was?
No,
I didn't. He was a playwriting faculty in the and he passed tragically young in the 90s.
Okay,
and his family put together this festival, and they do it every 2 years in his memory to foster.
It's not every year; it's every 2 years.
Every 2 years, because we don't want to throw our back out. If we did it every year, it would be just it would completely absorb our building.
Plays, installations, dance.
Yeah, a lot of dance. We saw an incredible dance piece this morning, even.
Yeah.
What? So also, there's panel discussions and things like that.
Workshops, guest artists. Yeah, you name.
What are some of the highlights of this year's festival? Like just in general, and also since we're in the middle of it, it's going on right at this very, very moment.
Yeah.
So it plays through Friday. So what are some of the highlights overall, and what are some of the things that people can still see?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to generalize the highlights, but...
Sure, you can. Just say your favorite.
Tell us, Emma, what you like.
There's a lot of statements being made, and I love every single one of them. There is an installation called Spoons, which runs every single day, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. You just walk right in, and you play this QR code game. And it's about energy budgeting and the Spoons theory for people with chronic and mental illnesses and how they have to divvy up their daily tasks. And, you know, we don't have energy for every single thing every single day. Oh, and so it provides a really direct imaging of that.
That sounds great.
I learned that I prioritize responsibilities over mental health. Yeah. Every day I do the Spoons. I know.
What?
Every day I do the Spoons, it tells me the same thing.
A teacher doing that?
Yeah, right.
So it's interesting. So is this part of the School of Theater and Dance?
Yeah, it's
and
all
that,
inside.
And yet that sounds like fine arts.
Yeah, it's all housed inside the College of Fine Arts, and so we invite artists from all over the campus to apply. But it feels you become the performer, so it's like an immersive installation as well. There's also like shows that you can see. So
tell us about some of those.
Yeah, we saw a piece yesterday called Zazz. It's spelled Zaz.
I love it already.
Easy. Yeah, it's.
I do.
It's even jazzier than jazz.
It's got zazz.
Yeah,
it could be in Chicago.
it's this really incredible Black arts performance piece that is commemorating the 20th anniversary, which is coming up, of Katrina.
Oh
and
my god!
It's a dance piece, theater piece. It feels like it's trying to engage with how that tragedy lives in our bodies and how we can use our bodies to engage with like how that means to us. Really beautiful, profound piece. Another one is this play called Then We'll Rest, which is a brand new play, deeply strange, about these two girls growing up. We meet them when they're 8 and then when they're 28. And they live in this super chaotic world. One of their family members dies tragically. And it's this really funny, dark, fast, weird, deeply weird play. And just give you a sense of, like, the range of the kind of work that's happening in the building, including shows for kids, too. I'm going to take my 2-year-old to a play tomorrow.
Your kid is not 2 years old.
He is two and change, Lisa. We got to get you together. But but it's this play called...
Fishing for Stars.
Fishing for Stars, thank you. And it's just beautiful, like, imaginative visual piece that... he saw it once in workshop, and he's like asking to go back.
Oh, that's so amazing! Well, we've only really got a couple minutes left, but I want to. You had mentioned that you've got these are all student run, student led. You give them a budget. Is there faculty or professional people that help them implement this stuff, like build, design, that kind of stuff, or is it 100% student done?
It really is, I would say, 99% student. They're there. They're there and they're accessible for advice and everything, but it's student lighting designers, student costume designers, student set designers, these student playwrights and directors that just throw everything together.
And do they arm wrestle for, like, rehearsal space and time on stage?
No, they do all that. I mean, that's part of your job as a producer, yeah, right?
We have so many classrooms. Classes don't go on this week, so every single classroom is available. So there's unlimited space. You walk in anywhere, and there's a performance going on.
That's great. Yeah. That's
so
amazing.
Anybody who wants to go to this festival, you can find it on the website, or you can just like walk into the building and you'll find something happening somewhere for the next few
right
days.
So you reservations are preferred but not necessary,
right?
I found it, you know, it's a hard URL to like out, yeah. But if you just go to a search engine and you put in Cohen New Works Festival, Coen New Works Festival, it pops right up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you get all sorts of information on it. I'm so excited to have had y'all on. I wish you had more time to talk.
Oh, our pleasure. This Thanks for having great. Us.
So we'll make sure we get you on early enough in 2 years. We'll put it
we'll
in the
back.
Calendar now. Well, wonderful. Thanks so much. That was, hold on, Patrick Shaw, I Can Do My Memory, and Emma Winder from UT Cohen New Works Festival is now through the 7th at University of Texas. For more information, Google Cohen New Works Festival. That's what I'd suggest doing. And I had a problem figuring out what to play here. I looked at all sorts of stuff. I hung with works. And so this is from the Cagney, from the musical Cagney, called A Work of Genius. We'll be right back.
A work of genius. Don't have to take time.
Well, that's it. We've done an hour. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank
y'all
you.
Are the yeah. y'all are a very you. Good co-host, not as good as Nicole.
No,
but very good. The Austin Common Radio Hour is next, and I believe we have some live guests in the house today, so that's going to be good. They're here trying to steal the microphones from us, so I'm just going to say stand by to come back to us next year when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And this is from the new musical Some Like It Hot, exactly as I promised. I promised last week, but I didn't play it, so I'm playing it this week. This is Jay Harrison Gee singing Z-Bap. We'll be back next week. Bye.
When a bully like you gets bossy and starts a-screeching like an alley cat, then Mr. Z-Bap, Zibbly, out of feet, bam, bam, is the phrase to make that cat go scat.